Hello and welcome to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. Delighted to be here with you on a Friday afternoon. We've got a great show for you, Dr. Jared Stout, second hour. And we're going to talk with him about getting Mary into your life. We defend Mary often on this program. That is, you know, her place in the plan of salvation, her queenship, her perpetual virginity, her ascension, all these things, all these dogmas and doctrines about Mary. But a little bit of practical help for getting Mary into your life. I know there are people who will ask, why would I want to get Mary into my life? Well, you can call and ask Dr. Stout that among the other questions that he will get in the second hour of the program today. First hour, Trent Horn, one of the top apologists in the world, has a new book. He's the author of Why We're Catholic, the most popular book ever published by Catholic Answers Press by a long shot. And now he's got a new book out called Confusion in the Kingdom, How Progressive Catholicism is Bringing Harm and Scandal to the Church. Trent Horn, welcome.
Cy Kellett, thank you for having me.
Congratulations on the book.
Yes, I'm very excited about this one. I think the cover art is really interesting. I actually asked, I'm pretty sure that this was created by a human, possibly with AI assistance, but a lot of people ask me if it's an AI cover, and I ask. I don't think it's totally AI.
It's funny because there's people in this office who I have heard, and they'll look at a piece of art online or at a book cover or something. They'll go, AI. And I can't tell. I don't know how it is. But this I believe, is the product of Shane. Is this a Shane book cover? Does anybody know? I think Shane, our graphic designer, made it. Confusion in the Kingdom. Jesus, right in the middle of it. So I suppose
everybody wants a piece of him. Everybody wants to tear apart his cloak, you know?
Yeah. Well, but what is progressive Catholicism?
Sure. So it's one of those things where it can be hard to define, but you know it when you see it. Mm-hmm. And a typical pattern I see among progressive or self-identified liberal Catholics or left Caths, and here I need to make a distinction. Well, if you think about a theological spectrum, which sometimes overlaps with the political spectrum, but doesn't always, on the far left side of the church, you might have, for example, open dissenters, people who will say we ought to have women priests, there ought to be same-sex marriages in the Catholic Church, the abortion is not sinful, contraception is not sinful. So people on the Catholics for Choice, for example, would be an example of this, on the far left, openly dissenting. One rung before that, before you get there, you have individuals who will claim to be faithful to the teaching of the magisterium and say, well, of course, I assent to the teaching on sexuality, on life. But then they'll do things that are confusing. These are well-known lay individuals, writers at the National Catholic Reporter, theologians, contributors to American Magazine, priests. In my book, I cover people like Father James Martin, Father Dan Horan, individuals who then create confusion to say, well, yes, I assent to the teaching on homosexuality, but should we really fire a teacher who's in a same-sex marriage, who's at a Catholic high school? They seem to not be as concerned about scandal related to issues related to sexual ethics or, let's say, platforming someone whose views on social justice they admire, but who also happens to defend legal abortion. Whereas if someone were to platform a self-identified Catholic who happened to be racist, they would be completely opposed to that. So my concern among liberal and progressive Catholics is taking what is obligatory, such as the church's teachings on chastity and sexual ethics, merely making them permissible, and then follow them if you want, but you know, you don't really have to follow them, or make it seem like they're not as important or not as grave to violate. Then the other side would be taking what is permissible, like a certain liberal political view on a contemporary issue, like climate change or gun control or immigration, and say that that permissible view is the obligatory view all Catholics must hold. Catholics have to support every initiative to combat climate change. They have to support any organization that claims to be anti-racist, even if the organization espouses anti-Catholic views. They have to consider deportation intrinsically evil, and on and on and on it goes. So the goal of the book is to clear up the confusion that many of these voices have raised over the years.
The book is available now. It's called Confusion in the Kingdom. It does what you're describing sounds to me like something where you have an ideology and you use Christianity to promote the ideology rather than having Christianity and adjusting your ideologies to fit the demands of Christianity.
Right. And I think that's one of the biggest problems when I engage those who would identify as being a liberal Catholic or a progressive Catholic, is that I think they tend to look at issues purely through a modern secular political liberal lens. Now, there's nothing wrong with using sound reasoning to identify particular moral and ethical issues. But a lot of times I see that those political commitments, tend to be what drives the discussion rather than looking at it from the view of the magisterium and seeing, for example, the nuances the magisterium might bring to the question. So recently, for example, seeing among these liberal Catholics raising quite a stink on the issue of transgender ideology, Father Dan Horan openly defends the idea, an anthropology that says a person can be a woman simply because they identify as a woman, for example. And he was, at least the time I was writing, was affiliated with an all-Catholic female college that actually got in the news for allowing so-called transgender women to be admitted and then reversed its policy, which he objected to. So looking at it from, you know, being committed to that. So when Pope Francis talks about gender colonization as being one of those dangerous ideas today, or the new document from the DDF on human dignity refers to the assault on dignity that comes from so-called, you know, gender reassignment surgery, they just bend over backwards to not want to accept just what the church has continually taught, but also currently teaches on these matters, or they want to continue to nuance it or water it down as much as possible, hoping that they can get a shift in the teaching at some point.
If you'd like to talk with Trent, 888-318-7884 is the number. We're talking about his new book, Confusion in the Kingdom, How Progressive Catholicism is Bringing Harm and Scandal to the Church. It's, I mean, there's no kind of, and there's no one who has a monopoly on using the church to cover an ideology.
Absolutely. I was going to say, Cy, that one of the objections that people raise to this book, it's a stock objection, is, well, what about the people on the right who are causing the reactionaries on the right? Or people will say, what about traditionalists or radical traditionalists,
right,
who cause confusion and scandal in the church? And I would say, yes, just as there are people on the far left who reject church teaching, there are people on the far, far right who openly reject it, like a Sedeva Contest, for example, who denies that the See of Peter has been held by a valid pope for, like, what, 70 years now? So that would also be a case of going off the edge. You can go off the cliff on the left or the right, and before you go off the cliff, there are people who sound very, who will, on the right, I find more on the left, the error comes from trying to make the forbidden permissible. So trying to make the forbidden actions, moral actions, to try to make them permissible. On the far right, or not the far right, on the right, I see more a confusion that aligns from trying to make what is permissible obligatory, like that you have to reject the theory of evolution if you're a faithful Catholic, or you cannot use natural family planning if you are a faithful Catholic, that it's no different than contraception. So I am planning, Cy, to write a book in the next few years on I call a very specific term, the counterpart to confusing liberals or progressives, and that would be Catholic fundamentalists. So I don't want to, for example, like, I'm not going to say radical traditionalists, because there's nothing wrong with embracing tradition. Tradition is a good thing, as long as you recognize that you allow the freedom of others who may not want to choose a tradition that is permissible at this point, that's not obligatory, like a certain liturgy to attend, or, you know, something like that. So I contrast that. There's nothing wrong with caring about the traditions of the church. The error there is what I call Catholic fundamentalism of oblige. And I was going to call, yeah, so I was going to focus on that and what it obliges people to. So I do hear that. I actually thought about, for this book, I thought about covering both in one book, but it just wasn't feasible. So this is almost like a part one. And then in a few years, I will address that as a part two. But that doesn't take away from the truth of what I have right now.
Yeah, in Confusion in the Kingdom. I actually wondered if maybe part of your thinking on this is that, you know, if you're a progressive Catholic in the sense of this idea of kind of accepting the sexual revolution and even kind of saying, well, the sexual revolution and I don't know, some scientific research, you know, social science or whatever has changes what the church should be teaching about sexuality or
right.
That you have the entirety of pop culture, television news, the universities are on that side. So it does seem to me that that's more dangerous in the sense that it's a way of accommodating to the culture in the way that the right wing, what you might call a fundamentalist, is actually yeah. trying to be countercultural. We may and should argue with that and defend the what's true in the church, but
right.
but it does seem to me like the kid who encounters many of these kind of I don't know accommodated teachers at their Catholic university or Catholics, you know, on Twitter or what's that group, Catholics for Choice or whatever.
Right.
All they're getting is support to just go with the culture.
Yeah, it's the exact opposite of what Paul says in Romans 12:2. Do not be conformed in the pattern of thinking of this world, but rather be transformed by the renewal of your mind. Do not be conformed to the thinking of this world. Paul also says that Satan is the god of this world. So it's one thing to be able to want to present authentic Catholic teaching in a way the modern world understands, but it's quite another to look at, for example, the church's teaching on sexuality and almost be embarrassed or ashamed yeah. of it. And I find many of that the strategy seems to be among not the complete dissenters, but ones more on the left or progressives, is all we have to do to reach out to those who identify as LGBT, for example, is just practice, you know, kindness and charity. Or on the left side, frankly, they don't like apologetics at all. I have a whole chapter in the book on the disdain progressive Catholics have for apologetics, because I really do think that, and I don't cover this in the book, but I hopefully in a future work will, many of them think that the only people who are in danger of being damned are those hard-hearted fundamentalists, basically.
Yeah.
So their concern is more about promoting social justice in this life rather than evangelism. We're thinking, well, as long as we were very kind and charitable, that would be enough to convince people. Now, I agree that that is a necessary condition to be kind and charitable, but it's not a sufficient condition. In some cases, a person may be overwhelmed by receiving the love of Christ from us through charitable actions. That's a great thing. But in many other cases, a person may say, I appreciate you being kind to me. And I cover the story in the book about a LGBT activist who was reading an article from a progressive Catholic saying, you know what, we should just go and give out water bottles at pride parades and say, we love you. And this LGBT activist said, I hate this stuff. At least the fundamentalists are honest and say that we're sinners and we need to change. I can appreciate that. But you don't just say love. You say that what I'm doing is a sin. Just tell me that because I think you're wrong. Okay, let's have a conversation about that. I feel like they shy away from where the culture butt heads with us because some people butt heads aggressively here. But we can engage the culture assertively, but also charitably.
888-318-7884. The number, our guest is Trent Horn. The Council of Trent is Trent's very popular YouTube site and podcast. Check it out on YouTube. Just look for Council of Trent or go to councilofTrent.com to find out what Trent is up to. We'll be right back. Discuss the book, Confusion in the Kingdom, and take some calls for Trent right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Catch Catholic Answers Live anytime at Catholic.com.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects home buyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite Monks of Wyoming. Delicious Mystic Monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All Mystic Monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase Mystic Monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
Hi, this is Father Mike Schmitz. Please join me for Ascension's Bible in a Year and Catechism in a Year here on EWTN Radio. We're going through the entire Bible and the Catechism in 365 days. If you've ever wanted to understand what it means to be Catholic and allow those truths to shape your life, this is for you.
Bible in a Year and Catechism in a Year with Father Mike Schmitz. Tonight at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific on EWTN Radio.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Our guest is Trent Horn, and he's got a new book out. It's called Confusion in the Kingdom, How Progressive Catholicism is Bringing Harm and Scandal to the Church. I feel like, actually, Trent, this has been going on my whole life, and as you know, I'm very, very, very old, but maybe you know about Father Drynan, you know, the Jesuit in Massachusetts, who kind of like...
Father Robert Drynan, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this is back in the 70s. Kind of creating a way for certain left-leaning Catholic politicians to get away with being pro-choice, because he kind of developed this idea that people took, which was, well, I'm personally opposed, but I would never impose that my beliefs on someone else.
He ended up being a congressman and was one of the reasons why Pope St. John Paul II, you know, said in the Revised Code of Canon Law that clerics cannot hold elected office.
Yeah.
Because you get scandal like this.
But I guess my point is, that's 50 years ago. This kind of thing has been going on a long time.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. So when it comes to the issue of abortion, among those who are progressive Catholics, they might say, well, yes, obviously abortion is a sin, but maybe we shouldn't try to make abortion illegal, right? Maybe we should just focus on the root of the problem. And it's just an economic problem. If we just focused on their proposed, usually democratic, political programs, that would reduce abortions. And that's all that we should do, which of course commits an either or fallacy, because someone could say, oh, well, you could have social programs and also work to legally protect unborn children. It's not an either or mentality. Why does it have to be? And number two is, as I show in the book, I mean, we have an obligation to secure the right to life of all human beings, to make sure all human beings in a society are treated justly. A society can't just mistreat human beings because it's the popular fashion of the day. And also I point out in the book that those who say, well, it's just an economic problem, that's actually not true, because if you go to other countries in Europe, for example, I believe Sweden has an abortion rate that is similar to the United States, and they have copious entitlement programs and social welfare and benefit programs for their citizens. The fact is that when you look at studies of women at different economic levels, a woman who makes $50,000 a year is four times more likely to choose abortion than someone who makes less money, and like, you know, $20,000 a year, which is counterintuitive, right? And many people, the majority of people who choose abortion, though, would probably come from, would come from a lower socioeconomic class, just like numbers-wise, right? You know, not everybody's up in the upper class. But also, those people also tend to have more children, whereas those in the upper echelons of society, they tend to be, when contraception fails, for example, for them, they are much, much more likely to choose abortion, even though they have the means to care for a child. So it's interesting.
888-318-7884 is the number, 888-318-7884. There's no question that if you're going to defend the teachings of the Catholic Church, people on the right wing and people on the left wing are going to be mad at you. There's just no question about that. But there is a kind of accommodationist thing going on the left wing, where we have, I mean, like, we don't have a major problem of Catholic schools being too right-wing, but we do have a problem of Catholic schools flying the pride flag out in front of the Catholic school.
And you have people who will argue, people like Father James Martin, who will say, well, what's wrong with that? The flag just means, to them, it just means this is a welcoming place for anyone, regardless of their sexual orientation. All people are made in the dignity and all people have dignity and all people are made in the image and likeness of God. So what's wrong with that? And as I show in my book, Father Martin would not tolerate that argument used for another controversial symbol. So if I were to say to him, yes, but this pride flag is also its primary meaning. The primary meaning of the pride flag by most people who fly it is that sexual behaviors between people of the two sex are morally good. They are something to celebrate. The behavior itself is a good thing we ought to celebrate. That's what the flag means. It's just what it means. Just because you could find a few liberal Catholics who say that's not what it means to me doesn't change that's what it means to other people. So I would ask Father Martin, hey, Father Martin, would you mind if a Catholic high school flew the Confederate battle flag? Because this school in Alabama, what it means to them is Southern culture is really special and we value it. I'm sure he would say it doesn't matter because the fact that some people, or even if it's a minority, use the Confederate battle flag as a racist symbol, that means nobody, no Catholic can ever use it because it's been tainted by them. And yet they won't apply the same standard to things like the pride flag and its other iterations and variations. So my goal, once again, in the book is to show that they create confusion in treating some sins, like the sin of wage theft or the sin of racism, with the vigor it deserves, though sometimes they muddy the waters in misidentifying what those sins even are. But they don't have the same zeal towards culturally accepted sins like sodomy, legal abortion, promoting mutilative surgeries, for example, on young people, things like that.
888-318-7884 is the number. I'm going to go to the phones, but just to let you know, you can save 25% right now on Confusion in the Kingdom, Trent Horn's new book, when you use the promo code SANITY during checkout at shop.catholic.com. Use the promo code SANITY and save 25%. Let's go to Tony in Boston watching on YouTube. Welcome, Tony. Go ahead with your question for Trent.
Hey, gentlemen. Trent Horn, big fan. Thank you for your work.
Thanks.
I was looking at a distributist group in a city I'll be moving to, and I was horrified to see that it was basically just a front for socialism. It was labeled as a Catholic worker movement, but it was just atrociously left-wing. Do you talk at all about how it affects what should be really explicitly political movements, or is it mostly retained to bioethics and sexual ethics in your book?
Sure. So part one of the book is called Sex and Life Issues, and it focuses on issues related to the watering down of the teachings on sexuality and human life. Part two of the book deals with faith and justice. So that deals more with elements of our faith, like confusing Christologies, God the Mother, feminist theology, confusing takes on the Eucharist as if it's not actually Jesus present or we shouldn't treat it in that way. I also talk about social issues where liberal Catholics demand Catholics adhere to modern secular liberal positions on these issues when they're not obliged to. So I cover racism, liberation theology, deportation, gun violence, and the last chapters on climate change. However, and I tell you what, stay on the line, and we'll send both books to you because I'll do what I want. I'll do what I want. I want to send you two books. I want to send you Confusion in the Kingdom, Tony, and I also want to send you my book, Can a Catholic Be a Socialist? The answer is no. Here's why. Because in that, I didn't cover economics as much in this book because I covered that really at length in my previous book, Can a Catholic Be a Socialist? And I have an appendix on distributism. Now, my position on distributism, and I and Catherine Bacalik, my co-author, who's a Catholic economist, take this view. Catholics are permitted to be distributists, true distributism. We find a lot of pragmatic and prudential difficulties with it as a modern economic system. But I've done debates before with a distributist. Actually, I did a debate with a distributist and a socialist once, And the distributists started sounding more and more and more like a socialist, because in order to achieve the distributed limits on owning capital and other things like that, you really need a very strong central government and intervention in the economy to do that. And it really starts to turn into socialism very quickly, in my opinion. But so, yeah, I don't cover economics as much in Confusion in the Kingdom, Tony, because I covered it in Can a Catholic Be a Socialist? So I'd like to send you both books. I think you'll like that. So,
okay, Tony?
Yeah, do you have any,
well,
do you have any follow-ups?
So generous. Thank you.
Yeah,
I guess,
no problem.
First, thank you very much. I had a follow-up, but it just left my brain, so I won't keep you on the line while we wait for processing to happen.
All right, Tony, we have similar brains. Thank you very much for the call. Lots more folks on the lines. We've got to take a quick break. We're talking with Trent Horn, whose podcast and YouTube site are Council of Trent. You can find them at TrentHornPodcast.com, or just go to YouTube and look for Trent Horn and you'll find him. Confusion in the Kingdom is the new book. We'll talk more about it right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Why We're Catholic is the one book you can hand to anyone to invite them into or back to the Catholic faith. With more than 400,000 copies sold, Trent Horn's book has had a number one ranking on Amazon.com for 5 years running. Now available in softcover, bulk cases, ebook, and on Audible. Find out what the excitement is all about. Order your copies of Why We're Catholic at shop.catholic.com or visit whywearecatholic.com.
When the resurrected Jesus appeared to disciples on the road to Emmaus, they didn't recognize him until the breaking of the bread. The same is true today. In the Holy Eucharist, we really meet Jesus. In The Eucharist is Really Jesus, author Joe Heschmeyer explains how knowing Jesus in the Eucharist is the key to understanding all of Christian faith. Order your copy of The Eucharist is Really Jesus today at shop.catholic.com or get it at a good Catholic bookstore.
If you're not a Bible scholar, the full message of how the Sunday Mass readings fit together can be tough to comprehend. Apologist Carlo Broussard is here to help. Join Carlo every Friday for the Sunday Catholic Word Podcast. In each episode, he unpacks the scripture readings for that Sunday and brings them all together so you can better understand and defend the faith. Visit SundayCatholicWord.com to subscribe. That's SundayCatholicWord.com.
Are you scared to talk about abortion? Don't worry, almost everyone is. You can overcome this fear, as Trent Horn shows in the newly revised and expanded second edition of Persuasive Pro-Life. With a little knowledge and a few proven techniques, you can become a bold and effective apologist for life. Visit shop.catholic.com to order your copy of Persuasive Pro-Life and never again be afraid to speak up. Also available at good Catholic bookstores.
I'm Deacon Harold Burke Sibley. Join me for Beacon of Truth.
On the next Beacon of Truth, the vine and the branches, and looking at Soulful Psalm 139.
Now back to Catholic Answers Live with Cy Kellett.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Trent Horn's here with us. And he's got a new book out, Confusion in the Kingdom, How Progressive Catholicism is Bringing Harm and Scandal to the Church. You can get it over at shop.catholic.com for 25% off right now if you use the promo code SANITY. Back to the phones, I think we're going, Trent. We got.
Let's do it.
Yeah, there's two lines open, but we've got plenty of callers for the moment. Justin is in Arkansas listening on the Catholic Answers Live app. Justin, welcome. Go ahead with your question for Trent.
Hi, Trent. Good morning or afternoon. And I was listening to your podcast this morning on Patreon, and I was just kind of wondering your opinion based off this book and your discussion you had this morning about the what role the access to information kind of plays into the confusion in the kingdom with instant access, 24-hour news cycle, looking for controversy.
I think what social media and online information tends to do with this is that it creates a kind of tribalism. So what ends up happening is you have the leaders in your tribe you look up to. And algorithms will respect that there's certain sources you want to look at and just keep recommending those. And you'll bury yourself in particular views. So if you're more of a liberal Catholic, you'll have your tribe and you try to understand their views on matters. And eventually you don't even realize it, although people on the right do this as well. They absolutely do it. So on either side, what happens is you have the people you look up to. You have the positions that are kind of the positions of your tribe. You have the people who are the enemies of the tribe that are not to be trusted. And you're always kind of at war with that other opposing ideological group. And, and so everything they do is through a hermeneutic of suspicion, and everything your side does, there's an explanation for it if there's a difficulty or a scandal or, something like that. So I have noticed that, and it is very difficult to see. And it's all of us. I mean, I can be guilty of tribalism as well, and psychological biases, cognitive bias, doing things like overlooking evidence that I find inconvenient for my worldview. All of us have to struggle against that. But seeing this where people get reinforced, and they're especially people where their community are just other people who are very, very outspoken on social media, I think it can lead to them to have that very black and white binary thinking and just falling into a trap of saying, yeah, these that your faith becomes aligned to certain political positions and just treating with disdain those who don't share that view or disagree with you. And it's something both sides have to work on.
Okay, Justin?
Yeah, thank you.
Oh, all right. Thank you. Thanks very much. Oh, let's send Justin a copy of Confusion in the Kingdom if he wants it. Hang on.
Of course. Let's do it.
Yeah. Hang on, Justin. We'll send it to you. Let's go to Columbus, Ohio, where Will is listening on St. Gabriel Radio. Will, welcome. Go ahead with your question.
Hi, Trent and Cy. Love your work. Really faithful listener here in Central Ohio. I'm a faithful reader of National Catholic Reporter, America, Commonweal, you name it. I read all of them, and I read on the right as well. So I enjoy your balanced approach. My question that I have is, now I came into the conversation a little late. You were mentioning the priest who was a congressman back in, I believe, the 70s and 80s. Who was scolded by John Paul as a congressman for taking that position.
Father Drinan,
I have a question about... Yes, I have a question. I read this, and I want to know your take on it. There was a meeting in Hyannisport in the late 60s, early 70s, that was at the Kennedy compound with various theologians giving their opinions about how they could craft an opinion to support abortion and some other things that are against the church. Do you recall that? And can you give me any idea about who was there or how that was organized or anything?
I do not. I am not familiar with that alleged meeting. So unfortunately, I wouldn't be able to enlighten you on that. I do think, though, that the movement of the Democratic Party to embrace legal abortion and to have really just an absolutist position on abortion, that their goal would be that it should be legal through all 9 months of pregnancy for any reason. Now, they would say, well, we only say just the health of the mother after viability. Okay, what counts as health? Well, it's anything physical, emotional, psychological, familial, or age-related, and this is what they always argue for. And really, a lot of them would even say, yeah, up till the moment of birth, that's mother's choice, maybe even shortly thereafter, and the government should pay for it, and doctors shouldn't be able to refuse it, and pregnancy resource centers shouldn't exist because they deceive, quote-unquote, deceive people. So this absolutist position is not what they've always had. This is something that has developed over time. Really, when you look at the trajectory of it, you go back to the early 1970s after Roe versus Wade. Many people who were opposed to legal abortion after Roe were actually political liberals. They were people who were Vietnam War protesters, for example. You had people like Ted Kennedy and Jesse Jackson, who were at one point opposed to legal abortion, at least to a point, they certainly did not have the absolutist position that the Democratic Party holds today. And by the way, this isn't just parties. Although I will say it's not uncommon to find a pro-choice Republican. It's very, very difficult to find a pro-life Democrat. There are a few who are out there, but they really need to be placed in a preserve. They're quite the endangered species. So you see this, that really early on in the 70s and early 80s, really in the 70s, I would say, you had Democrats who were pro-life, who were against abortion. But I think after the election of Ronald Reagan and the moral majority, Pat Robertson in the 1980s, that's where you see the shift in the fault lines of, because also in the 80s was the time when American Protestants were getting on board with the Right to Life movement. People don't know this, but the National Right to Life Committee was basically started by Catholics. During the 70s, a lot of Protestants said, well, no, abortion's a Catholic issue. The Bible doesn't really say anything about this. You had the Southern Baptist Convention defending abortion in the case of rape, for example. You know, a lot of evangelicals who were not on board, they didn't get in there till the 80s. So the 80s where we see the split. But even there in the 90s, you had Bill Clinton's triangulation, safe, legal, and rare. And then now it's really in the past, like, well, they got permission to go full blast since they lost with Roe being overturned. But in the past, like, 5-10 years, you see it a lot more vociferous. So I do think that their position, liberal position on abortion, especially in the Democratic Party, it's not something I would say that was personally opposed, but there were certainly the Cuomos, some of the Kennedys were putting this line out there, but it wasn't a universal line. Though honestly, now I think a lot of Democrats don't even say personally opposed. They don't say that. That was more, because it's like, well, why are you personally opposed? What's the big deal? I see more. There is a gradual embrace of the abortion absolutist position among the Democrats and Democratic Party in America. So I'm not familiar with there being like a cabal that gave talking points, but the existence of such cabals also wouldn't surprise me. Is that helpful?
Oh, do we still have him with us? Sorry, there was a lot of changes. Yeah. Was that helpful?
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Yeah.
All right. Thank you for the call. That actually brings us to the break. We got to take a quick break. We'll take more calls for Trent, and there are lines open if you'd like to get in the queue. 888-3187-884. Trent Horn, Catholic Answers Apologist, has a brand new book out. It's called Confusion in the Kingdom: How Progressive Catholicism is Bringing Harm and Scandal to the Church. If you'd like to get in on the conversation, give us that call. 888-318-7884.
This is Archbishop Paul Coakley, the Archdiocese of Oklahoma City, and you're listening to Catholic Answers Live.
Who was the first Catholic in your family? Were they evangelized by a friend, a coworker, a stranger? Did you ever think that you could be that person that God uses to save a soul, and that soul could save their family, their grandchildren, and generations to come? At St. Paul Street Evangelization, a Catholic nonprofit, we train, equip, and mobilize Catholic disciples to do the urgent work of evangelization. Catholic Answers is supported in part by St. Paul Street Evangelization. StreetEvangelization.com.
The most original and exclusive Catholic content is on EWTN Radio.
Human beings are God's greatest masterpiece. Every person is made in the image and likeness of God. But every saint, that is, every person who accepts God's invitation, his upward call to make them holy. And so every story presents us with a unique masterpiece that God is writing.
The Journey Home, Monday night, 8 Eastern, on EWTN Radio and Television.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host. Our guest is Trent Horn, Trent of the Council of Trent podcast that you can find at councilofTrent.com or just go on YouTube. The best place is to go on YouTube. You get to see it and hear it. Go to YouTube, look up Trent Horn. You'll find all kinds of great material there. Confusion in the Kingdom, How Progressive Catholicism is Bringing Harm and Scandal to the Church is Trent's latest book. It really is a beautiful book. I have to say to you, Trent, the first thing I opened up to in the book when I got my copy of it was the section that kind of dealt with transgenderism. And the reason I did was because the CAS report had come out, when by the time I got my book, and this was the report came out long after you finished the book. And a lot of people in Europe are taking the cast report quite seriously. They're saying this is harmful to girls. We have to stop. There are British politicians coming out and saying, I'm just not doing the pronoun thing anymore. It's destroying, because an actual scientist went and looked at the science and said, look, this is a massive study of the consequences of this on kids' lives, and you're pretty hard pressed to find anything good coming out of it.
Yeah.
So I wanted to see what you had to say, because I think
it's a counterfeit religion. It is a religion devoted to autonomy, radical ownership of self, and to just unlimited so-called freedom of actions to define oneself. And this has been going on for a long time. You think about in the Supreme Court, you had Casey versus Planned Parenthood. And one of the defenses of abortion in that case was the famous mystery passage from Justice Kennedy.
Oh, yeah.
He always had these Fruit Loopy kind of lines in the opinions of the court, saying, for example, freedom includes the ability to define one's life, one's existence, the meaning of the universe. And it's no, freedom doesn't mean I get to define whether somebody else is a human being or not. He also was writing in the Obergefell decision that marriage has to be legally redefined, because what about someone who calls out into the night, into the dark, and doesn't hear an answer and is sentenced to a life of loneliness or something like that, saying that's actually not what marriage is for. Marriage is not for solving the problems of loneliness. There are many people who are unmarried, who are healthy individuals. They are not consigned to loneliness by virtue of being unmarried. They are still human beings with dignity. And there are married people who have dysfunctional marriages who are actually quite lonely. But yeah, so it's so unfortunate to see. But with the transgender issue, you're right. I go through the book and I engage Catholics who claim that Catholic theology is compatible with gender reassignment. And Father Horan, as I mentioned before, who says that if a bishop doesn't adopt transgender ideology, you should call him Sister so-and-so and see how he feels. And I would say, well, actually, we have objective evidence that his status as a bishop did change with multiple witnesses giving him the sacrament of holy orders. So it's that's certainly, you're actually undermining your own case in saying something like that. But it is very difficult to see once again, Cy, on the transgender issue. I think many of the liberal Catholics, I mean, there are some, and I understand that, who are asking for sensitivity in language and pastoral accompaniment of those who suffer from gender dysphoria. I understand that. But many of them go far beyond that to try to legitimize this anti-Catholic and false anthropology of the human person.
But I'm wondering if people will, if something like that, what it was becoming so obvious is if you went with pop culture on transgenderism, people like us said, don't do that. And now the science turns out to support that and say, don't do that. Are people going to wake up a little bit as Catholics and say, maybe my first move morally should not be to try to accommodate myself to pop culture, but at least I should be a little more critical of pop culture.
Yeah, you should be critical. Now it doesn't mean that everything pop culture gives us is wrong. I mean, there are Catholics, during the time of Galileo, who said, look, the church tells us that the sun goes around the earth, and pop culture is now giving us a different perspective. So that is something we can assert and say, well, is the exact order and nature of the universe something that the Bible is asserting to us, or is the Bible asserting and teaching something else? Should we treat the Bible like a science book or not? But that doesn't mean, so when people will say, well, it's basically the same thing, that science gives us new information on homosexuality, so we need to change what the church teaches on that. Well, what new information? It shows that it's an orientation that you can have. It's something that you can be part of your disposition. Although that contradicts gender theorists who would say that your identity and orientation can change at the drop of a hat. So it does contradict that a bit. But even if it were to show that scientific fact doesn't change anything. Science has shown more that that some inclinations to steal are an orientation that arises from kleptomania for some people. It's just a biological orientation they have. But it doesn't follow, therefore, that the seventh commandment no longer applies because we have this new science that tells the origins of why some people steal. So they really are trying to answer by going to science to answer these moral questions. It's like trying to weigh a chicken with a yardstick. You're using the wrong tool.
Donnie in Texas, listening to EWTN on Channel 130 Sirius XM Satellite Radio. You are up next, Donnie. Go ahead with your question for Trent Horn.
Good evening, and I'm going to a area that may have a dead zone, may drop off. But so my question is related to the use of methotrexate injection for ectopic pregnancy. From what I've found, there's no official ruling on that about the morality of that agent. And I've seen where some bioethicists approve it, some bioethicists have said that it, but I just wanted to see if you had any more information on that.
All right. Methotrexate.
Yes. Sure. So methotrexate is a drug, I believe it was previously used as an anti-cancer drug. It stops cellular growth. This is dealing with, now the church would certainly be opposed to using methotrexate for a direct abortion, for elective abortions, for direct abortions. Usually there, it's a combination of mifepristone and methotrexate are used to induce a miscarriage. However, in the case of ectopic pregnancy, where the child implants in the fallopian tube, you have a pathology, you have scar tissue in the fallopian tube, you have the child growing in the incorrect place, and the child can no longer, will not survive. They're growing in the wrong place. They're kind of dying. And so if you do nothing, both the mother and child will die, but you can intervene under the principle of double effect. So the classic views of, that have always been permitted would be to remove a section of the fallopian tube, which is a salpingectomy. So just remove that damaged section of the tube to remove the child. Though the church has currently left it an open question whether one can use two other methods. That would be salpingostomy, where you make an incision in the tube and remove the child. And you're not intending the death of the child. Rather, you're intending to move the child out of the mother's body to protect the mother from the child's continued growth that will cause the mother to die by severing blood vessels and arteries. Even though, so you don't intend the child's death, you foresee that that will happen. And there's a proportionate reason for doing so, because if you do nothing, both of them will die. So it's left open the question of salpingostomy, making an incision rather than removing the tube, and methotrexate, which would target the trophoblast, the cells that will eventually form the placenta. And some ethicists have argued that it's not a part of the child proper, that it's a way to remove the child from this dangerous position he or she is in, placing the mother in danger. And then the child then passes away when they leave the mother's body. So when I say the church has left it as an open question, what that means is it is permissible. You can privately hold the view that you find this to be immoral, but you cannot compel others to believe the same thing. And the church in the future could clarify this issue and say that upon further study and clarification, this is not permitted. That as new technologies develop, the church has to assess the object of the acts involved, the intentions and the circumstances, and whether they're just or unjust. So in the case here, it's the same thing that when other technologies have evolved, like when you have, for example, certain reproductive technologies. So you have reproductive technologies where the husband and wife engage in the marital act. Some of his semen is can some of his semen be taken from that and then placed in the mother's body to fertilize an egg in her body? It's something people hadn't dealt with before, and currently it's permissible. So when these things happen in these cases where we haven't had to deal with this before, or we have technology to address it, a lot of times it begins as a permitted opinion, and then the church issues a formal teaching either for or against. The church has done this as well in the case of radical hysterectomies for a uterus that can no longer sustain life and other things like that. If you have more questions on this, I would definitely recommend the National Catholic Bioethics Center.
Thanks.
They're good.
Thanks, Donnie. I'm going to keep moving. A confusion in the kingdom, how progressive Catholicism is bringing harm and scandal to the church. That's the new book from Trent Horn, our guest. I'm going to Greg in Montana, listening on the Catholic Answers Live app. Greg, welcome. Go ahead with your question for Trent.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. I'm Trent, huge fan of your podcast, and I really kind of found it from your dive into the questions on Mormonism. I thought that was really fascinating. But I know that you're going to be on Plants with Aquinas with talking with Pearl Davis in a few weeks. And I was just wondering, for questions that might not be labeled as progressive, but kind of the opposite, do you approach those questions the same way, saying that rather than marriage being two men or whatever like that, something like marriage elevates women to a position that is higher than some people might think?
You got it, Trent?
Obviously, that's not.
I think I understand it a little. A little bit, you know, that there are errors on the right and the left. I don't even know if I would call Pearl's errors on the right per se, but the people who seem to embrace it tend to have more conservative theological and political views. Pearl really adheres to a camp called the Red Pill Camp, which claims that, marriage is something that is bad for men, that women are ultimately bad for men because women have somehow gotten worse in society or things like that. And so, marriage is, you know, men should just avoid marriage. But many of the red pillars think that men having sexual relations with women, you know, that's not as a big a deal. But that would certainly go against what the church teaches on like the sin of fornication. So on the right, what I do is I try to show, look, what does the church teach? What does the church teach on this issue? I'll give you an example where the two sides sort of meet like a horseshoe. On the far left, you'll have people who will say contraception and NFP are basically the same thing. So we ought to treat contraception like NFP and say there's nothing wrong with it. On the far right, you'll have some Catholics who will claim contraception and NFP are not different. They're not different in any way. So we ought to treat NFP like contraction and consider it sinful. I would just say to both groups, a pox on both your houses. You're both wrong because you have failed to make a distinction between purposely intervening in the marital act, doing something that sterilizes the act and tells God, we do not want you here during this marital act, and natural family planning. Because all natural family planning is the marital act where man and woman fully give themselves to one another. It's a combination of two things. They either fully give themselves to one another and are completely open to life, or they do something else. They play badminton. They go to the movies. You do something else. And it's just a combination of those two things. So NFP is the kind of thing that could be abused in degree, as if you got married and you just didn't want children and you practiced, and because you don't want to be stressed, you know, because you just want to take vacations all the time and you just use NFP for your whole marriage. That would be a sin accumulated by degree. Versus something like contraception, which is a sin in every individual act when it is done, because it is an act against that future life, against God. It is an intervention in the marital act to set it against how life affirming that it ought to be, that God made it to be. So I hope I hope that's helpful, and I'm glad you called in, Greg.
Greg, I'll tell you what, I'd like to send you a copy of the book. I'm nervous now that I might have forgotten some people that they didn't get their book. But
if they didn't get their book,
call back.
The callback, or for anyone else listening, by the way, if you become a patron at trenthornpodcast.com in the month of May, so wait a few days, and in the month of May, if you become a patron at $10 a month or higher, or $100, an annual gift to support what we're doing at Council of Trent, you will get a free copy of Confusion in the Kingdom. That's only for people who subscribe in the month of May. It'll help us to build our new studio, to reach a lot more people. We're getting tens of thousands of views at Council of Trent. So if you want a free copy of your own and also help us at Council of Trent, in the month of May, become a supporter at $10 a month or higher at trenthornpodcast.com.
Trent, thank you very much. As always, enjoyed the hour with you.
See you too.
And congratulations on the new book. People can get it 25% off right now if you just want to. If you just can't wait, head over to shop.catholic.com. Use the promo code SANITY and get Confusion in the Kingdom: How Progressive Catholicism is Bringing Harm and Scandal to the Church. Do check out Council of Trent, TrentHornPodcast.com. Visit the YouTube website, because it's quite a thing that Trent's doing over there, and you won't be sorry you checked it out. All right, we'll be right back. Dr. Jared Stout is going to try to help us get a little more merry in our lives right after this.